My name is Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
And guest in the house today, Raw Dog himself, Lawrence Hubbard, man, the artist behind Real Deal. What else am I leaving on the table, Jimmy?
Real Deal is what I know you from, Lawrence, but not just the artist, the co-creator, the publisher of most of Real Deal's history. When I started looking for indie comics, and especially indie comics with unique voice and creators, nothing was better than Real Deal. It was as good as any of the indie comics I tracked down. And so very excited to talk to you about that, Lawrence.
Thanks for coming to the show. And the first question, what kind of comics were you checking out before putting pen to paper on, you know, your first published works?
Boy, early on, I really loved Mad. I used to read those a lot. I love the art and I love the satire of it and all the different artists in there, you know, Angelo Torres and Mort Drucker, Al Jaffe, all of those. And I really like that. I used to get regular comics sometime, you know, the usual Marvel and DC and everything. But it was funny, when I was real young, I used to do the Black Panthers used to have a newspaper. And it was funny. They'd have cops. They'd have like people shooting pigs, and the cops actually looked like pigs. And this is way back. And the cartoons were just real crazy. And every now and then my father would buy one, and I'd just sit up and just read it and stuff like that. And these are all the things I would read and draw in regular funny papers, you know, the you know, back when they used to have Dick Tracy, Nancy, Handicap, just all those different comics. I just look at all the different art styles and stuff like that. Some of the people who drew, you know, total realism, like Mary Worth or something. And then the cartoony style, all the, you know, different ones. So that, and then, you know, I started drawing when I was three. So that those are all my influences and stuff.
Were you doing other artwork, commercial art or illustration?
Before Real Deal?
Yeah.
Couple of things here. Most of I was just working all the time. We had it kind of rough and stuff. My father ran out on us. And then by the time I was in my late teens, I started working all the time. So basically I was, you know, doing shitty jobs, unloading trucks, stock rooms, stuff like that. And I really didn't have a, you know, I didn't have a chance to go to art school and stuff like a lot of people I knew. So I kind of really got in a Real Deal when I met HP with McElwee when we were working at Cal Fed, and I was in the stock room, and he'd been in the stock room, but he moved into the outer office where he's doing the invoices and stuff. And we would just be talking and stuff. And then, you know, that's why I say we were sitting down on the B2 level drinking and stuff, a little hideout down there. And he was drawing this crazy ass looking comic. You know, he drew kind of like in a stick figure style. And now looking, I said, "What the hell is this you're drawing?" He said, "This is GC." I said, "What?" And then he kept drawing them. It was just crazy. And I said, "Man, you know, I draw." He said, "I didn't know you draw." I said, "Yeah, I draw." Then, you know, I started drawing his stuff, just, you know, fleshing it out and everything. And then that's where we just started collaborating with each other and stuff. But both of us, you know, we're just working shitty jobs all the time. You know, just trying to survive. Never had time, you know, for any peace or anything. So that's what it kind of wound up being and stuff. Yeah.
When you guys connected and decided on Real Deal being the thing, how long did it take for you guys to make that first issue?
We started in the, it was funny. Like I said, it was just something we were talking about, and I remember I would draw some of it, and it wasn't really serious. And then what happened was he started sending it out, like trying to get a deal, you know, Marvel, DC, different comic companies. And, you know, everybody either turned us down and stuff, or it was funny. Like I said, when he hit up Marvel, the guy actually, they wrote a letter to us. It wasn't just the form letter. And because it was so funny, I remember the envelope. I lost this from so many years ago, but envelope came in the mail and it had, you know, Spider-Man on the envelope. I'm like, what the fuck? And I was like, oh, fuck, this is it. And we opened it up and the guy said, hey, you know, usually we just send out a form letter, but we read this. And he said, I had to answer. He said, this is fucking crazy and this, that, and the other. Sorry, we can't use it, but see you down the road. Yeah, he said that. So anyway, in 89, I guess they were both fussy. By that time, I was working at this company called National Medical. He was still at Cal Fed. And we're like, fuck it. You know, nobody's going to publish this and stuff. It's best to do it ourselves. But at the time, I was making pretty good money and stuff. So we decided to do the book. So I was busting ass like most people fucking around on the weekend. And when I was off, I was busting ass working, drawing Real Deal. And then the reason, I guess you guys got the first issue, the super big. What happened with that? We didn't know anything about printing. So I just drew it at the size I drew it. I didn't realize I needed to draw it at a size where it could be reduced by 50% or whatever. Then when we got the printer, and he said, well, I can't, you know, this is before you had all the digital shit. This is an 89. And he said, I can't reduce this any more than this. So he said, I'm going to have to print it, you know, big, you know, jumbo size. And I was like, you know, fuck it, go ahead, you know. And then that's where the super size, the first issue came out, jumbo size. And after that, I, you know, started doing the math and stuff and calculating how to, you know, do it where I could draw it, like, say, where it'd be done at a 50% reduction. But that was the first, and that's why the first issue is so big.
What did you do with it after you got it back from the printer? How did you get it in people's hands?
Oh, man, that was rough. It was like, you know, first you're trying to find a distributor and all that. Well, some of literally me, Harold, and another buddy, Kim Tate, like we literally, you know, drive around hitting up different comic shops, say, hey, you want to carry this? Hey, we'll give these to you for free. See what happens and stuff. And some people, you know, took them. Other people like, oh, this is horrible and shit like that. But then they'll just use the Marvel in DC and stuff. And we finally got, I think it was the first or the second issue, we got distribution with, Capital City, which is defunct now. But back then, you had to send them, like, you know, book and talk about it and stuff like that. So Harold sent it to him like 45 times. And finally, some guy named Isley said, hey, we'll distribute it to 45 times, but that shit was rough. And in fact, like I say, he's sending it through the mail. None of this, you know, did you know, computer stuff or fucking emails or anything like that. It was, you know, send shit out through the mail. So he distributed it. And then it was funny. It was just rough, though, because then at the same time, like if they put a listing in their catalog for your book, it was just a line, like it would say, Real Deal Comics, blah, 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 and that's it. So then if you wanted something bigger, you had to pay for that. So that's why you had to buy a fucking half page, full page. That shit was expensive. And, you know, we're just, you know, working guys. Like I said, I'm working at the time. I was working in a data center. And Harold's still at Cal Fed. He was working a record storage clerk. So, you know, it was rough. It was really, it was like a labor of love, because especially back then, it was just hard as hell to get anything done. And trying to run an ad somewhere, then, you know, if they screw it up or, you know, take months from the time you put the, you know, put it in till it actually came out. And the main thing, we hit a couple of little days, little Comic Con at the Shrine Auditorium. This guy named Schwartz called it the Sci-Fi Show or something. We hit a couple of those, and a lot of people love Real Deal. That was the thing when they saw it. It was so funny. Like, you see how you go to Comic Con and people dress up their tables and, you know, all the displays and shit. That first table, I remember I rented, it was a 6 foot long table, it was all beat up old wooden table. And we didn't know about bringing all this shit, so we literally just had the wooden table sitting out there with Real Deal on it, that was it. So backdrop, so nothing, just fucking Real Deal. And people walking up like, what the fuck is this? And they were looking at it and they liked it, Real Deal. And then the second time we did, it was funny, a guy walks up and he looks at the Real Deal. He said, I've seen this before. And I say, you have? Come to find out, some guy had taken one apart and made Xerox copies of it, staple them back together, and was selling. Like, God damn, you know, we're getting ripped off already, you know. So it was something else. It was just wild. But yeah, I mean, back then things are a lot easier now because the internet and stuff. But back then, man, it was hard. I mean, you know, both working full time, and it was, like I said, it was a labor of love. A lot of people just said, fucking gave up. It was no joke. Yeah.
Nowadays, a lot of people, you know, they'll fund their comics by way of Kickstarter, get people to pledge money and facilitate the printing that way. I thought it was a genius thing, man, looking through old Real Deal comics that you guys had, like, advertising in there. I'm curious whose idea it was to make that happen, and how did that work for you guys? Did you go around town individually talking to people? Did people get in touch with you? Like, that part of the process is interesting to me.
Oh, that was cool. Yeah, it was Harold came up with that. You know, he said, well, we got to get some money. So I think one of the issues I had where it showed your ad here, and, you know, with GC talking about run your ad. And then a lot of people who were fans, they already wanted to run ads. And so that issue, that's why I didn't like that Hicks Immaculate Printing. That was a guy I knew at the gym. Then it had some guy called Clan Busters, where he was funny. He was selling shit pro and anti Ku Klux Klan. So he loved Real Deal. He wanted to put a head in there. Yeah, and that punk rock band in there, and yeah, that was how I worked. But everything was just kind of off the cuff. Just fuck it, you run into somebody, say, hey, want to do this, want to do that. And because it was just so wide open, and like I say, both of us working full time jobs, and it was, you know, that was always my dream, just to be able to just draw a Real Deal, and that's it, you know, not have to waste time with other shit. So,
were you able to get enough ad revenue to publish the book without dipping into your own pockets?
No, a lot of those ads are like, you know, $50, $100, stuff like that. So. Basically, yeah, at the time, like I said, at the time I was an IT, I was a production consultant, so I made pretty good money. So usually, like, I would put the bill for the magazines, and Harold didn't make what I made, so he would handle it. His thing was on mailing lists. Like I say, back then, constantly mailing out postcards about Real Deal and stuff. And it's so funny, I think back how things were then compared to now, and it's just like we're back in the Stone Age and shit, but it's funny, you didn't know the shit that we have now was going to be, so that's how you do things how you had to do it at the time and stuff.
Lawrence, can you, we should describe the Real Deal storylines for people that are watching this that aren't familiar with Real Deal. You have GC, Greg, and our team. Can you kind of just give us a quick rundown of what each of those is about?
Yes, sure. Okay, GC stands for Gangsta Cool. GC, it's kind of funny. Like, you got three guys who type GC, Ace, Brogan, and Switch. With Slick Willie, and they still dress like they're back in the 70s. They're older brothers and stuff, and they basically just hustle all the time. They're vicious, violent, crazy. Nobody works. Everything is just hustling, stealing, or dealing, or anything you get. You know, if they just come across any bullshit they can to make them money and live. So GC lives with his old lady Pork Butt. She has a steady job, and it's her apartment, so he's just there, and he's just acting crazy. Every now and then he'll get some money. Most of the time he's broke. Ace Brogan, he's a ladies' man, and chicks like him. He's tall and slim. He got, it's funny, he still wears a shag, like a Jerry Curl shag. And he's a part-time barber. Most of the time he just hangs out with JC and shit, and they get Hogan, so Brogan. So he's, Willie, he used to be a pimp, but he's all burned out. He's like an alcoholic now and shit. And he just kind of fucked up in the head, and he just kind of hangs out with GC and Ace. And they just do crazy shit. He's ruthless, too. And he's kind of angry and frustrated and stuff. And and they just basically every episode, it's almost, we got a formula. We had a formula. GC goes to do something. Somebody confronts him. He goes dead off on him. And then mayhem ensues. A bunch of people get weathered. You know, GC's throwing a party. Chaos ensues. GC's going to the laundromat. Chaos ensues. Everything, no matter. GC is just somebody just. And we've known people like this way. Everywhere they go and everything they do is a bunch of fucked up, crazy shit occurs. Like, it's already started something. So that's the GC story. That's the main storyline. Then Planet Dregs is a prison planet. And like I said, we came out with this in 89, where prisoner, I forgot what his number is. But so anyway, like I said, starts off, the future is bleak. Outlook that the earth is full of fucked up people, so they had to set up a prison colony, Planet Dregs. And so the prisoner, you know, robots take you there in spaceships and they dump your ass off. And it's a prison planet, but I mean, there's no order like a prison, a ward, and all that shit. It's just you're on the planet, and you whatever the fuck you can do, you do it. If you live, you live. If you die, you die. But so then he runs into this robot, this android. Half man, half robot called Half Track, and they kind of hook up, and they just try to survive, and they just fighting all kind of aliens all the time, and trying to survive, trying to roam the skin. The main thing, they're trying to get back to the Earth, and each time, like, they'll go through a whole bunch of shit. It's kind of like, you remember on Gilligan's Island or one of, you know, a lot of shows where you're just trying to get back to somewhere. Like, you know, I'm trying to get back to Maine, to the mainland. I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to do that. And you know, the prisoner, you know, that was funny. You know, you just want to get back to the regular world, get off this, out of this prison place. So he's just trying to get back to the planet Earth, but every episode something fucked up happens and he's just trying to survive. So that's Planet Dregs. And then our team, you know, show you how far back we kick it. That was a parody of the A-Team. The only thing is the R team is they're all crazy. They're burned out. They were a bunch of burned out Vietnam vets. But if I did it now, I'd bump them up to Iraq. Afghanistan this shit because the guys would be in the late 60s and 70s. So anyway, they have like their own military group, their own their mercenaries. And they wind up killing the person who hires them besides killing the people that they're going after. And then they figure out a way to get some money out of that, but they're all crazy. And like you say, you run it, you think you're hiring them to do something, they wind up killing you. And they just go nuts. It's just fucking ruthless and crazy. But it's all funny and shit. And so those are the three main stories and stuff. And it's all kind of other characters that pop in and pop out.
You said you did some more local cons, but you and I met at San Diego Comic-Con before. And I wonder when did you start tabling at San Diego Comic-Con, and what were some of the highlights of those experiences?
Let's see. First time, because, you know, Harold, he passed away in 1998. He had a stroke, and he had a stroke, and he had a massive heart attack. So anyway, so then our buddy Kimte, guy he'd known since junior high, we got together. So we did the, like, his honor, we did the first Comic-Con we did was in 99, San Diego. And it was real cool. I think that's why I think we met Johnny Ryan there. And that's for either 90, because did one in 99 and did the other in 2001. And it was so funny. Back then, it was easy to get a table. You just let them know a few months in advance, hey, I need a table. No problem, you know. And now, fuck, you know, you got to, you know, table's a legacy. You got to leave them to your kids and shit. But back then, yeah, you got a table. And same thing, we had the real deal backdrop up and stuff, but pretty simple. So I had a lot of people coming by, and yeah, people loved Real Deal, because that's what I said. I think I met Johnny Ryan at that one, because he bought one, and like I said, I didn't know who he was. You know, he said a guy buying a book, and then like a bunch of people came by the table constantly buying Real Deal. Like, oh man, Real Deal, blah blah blah. He said Johnny Ryan sent me. Look, I said, who the hell is Johnny Ryan? Okay, and he kept, all these guys kept coming by. Oh, Johnny Ryan sent me. Johnny Ryan, and I said, whoever the hell Johnny Ryan, he's a real cool cat. I said, I like him. He appreciate this. And then, you know, later on, it's, oh, okay, this is Johnny. Okay, he came back by and stuff. He said, yeah, I sent some buddies by and stuff. So then, let's see. So, yeah, we sold a lot then. Then in 2001 came back. And it was real good con.
I was talking with Johnny Ryan very, very recently when I told him that we were going to be having this conversation, and he said that Glenn Bray was hip to your work before he was. Okay. Are you friends with Bray, or like how does that association work? I definitely saw he owns a couple pieces of your art. I saw that in his art book, Belated Eye.
Wow. Yeah. I don't remember him being there, so many people, but I haven't talked to him in a long time. I guess that would have been the last time. But yeah, so many people hit me up for artwork and stuff. But I can't really picture him right now. But
that's fair.
If he's a fan, God bless him. That's cool and stuff. But so then anyway, I didn't do another one until 2015. I think that's when I met you.
Yeah.
And I was with J.J. Villard. He's got a TV show on now, J.J. Villard's Grim Fairy Tales. I was sharing the table with him. And then this guy named Jeremy Bernstein. He's a storyboard guy or something over at DreamWorks. Yeah, he's over there. So that's when we met. And then so I was there, 2015. And then 2016, that's when I had the I ran into the people at Fantagraphics, and then they said they wanted to do a book with me and stuff. And in 2016, the book was out. And then I was there in 2016. And then, let's see, 2017. I've been there every year. And then, Real Deal 2000, Real Deal number 8 came out. I guess it was 2017, 2018. So I've been there every year since then. It's been cool since, except for this year, you know, everything's shut down. But, every year since. Yeah, you haven't been there since 2015, have you? Yeah, I haven't seen you since then and stuff. But yeah, man, it's just a trip. But the struggle continues and stuff.
Lawrence, you there was a little bit of time, like in 2009, 2010, where Picture Box, I think, was selling some of your Real Deal artwork. I think they might have published an issue or were going to publish a book. I think they went out of business. But do you remember, is that right? Were you working with Picture Box for a little bit?
Yeah, yeah.
Dan
what was the guy's name again? Nadel, I think. Nadel. And he loved Real Deal. So he bought, because it was so funny. I had run out of Real Deal number twos. And I got a real fucked up printing experience with this guy who did them. So I didn't get nearly, but anyway. So I did a reprint on Real Deal number two. And then Dan Nadel just bought like a bunch of them, sight unseen. And I saw this is cool. Like, yeah, because he'd never seen a Real Deal, but he just bought them. And then he said, you got to sign them. I said, okay, I'll sign them all and stuff. Because he was also, yeah, I think he went out of business, but yeah, he's a big Real Deal fan. Because I met him, Johnny Ryan, they had like a Q&A with the Center Family Theater. It used to be called the Silent Movie Theater here out here in Fairfax. And it was cool. And I had my first one there and everything. Some chick, I forgot her name, she would do all this hippie dippy stuff. But I guess she's in the 70s, 60s, 70s. And she's sitting out in the audience, and I'm up on the stage doing my thing. And then she said, Real Deal is a misogynist that does all this bullshit. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I said, well, when you were up talking, I didn't interrupt you. So then a bunch of young chicks in the audience told her to shut up. They said, it's just a comic book, shut up, and all that. And it was so funny. And so then we were like doing signing and selling our books out on the patio back there. And I had people coming up, lining up who bought their Real Deals, who had bought Real Deal earlier, years earlier, and they heard I was going to be there. So they wanted me to sign them for them. So I'm up there signing and signing. And she's over, like, hardly anybody's buying her shit or looking at her shit, just nothing. And then she started talking cool to me. Oh, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, yeah, shit. I said, all of a sudden, nobody's buying your shit. You see people lined up for mine. So now you're like, oh, giving me props and stuff like that. But I can't remember that woman's name. But it was just funny. It was just like this whole triggered thing, you know. And this was years back. Because recently, this December, I spoke at the Parsons School of Art in New York, and they flew me there, put me up in the hotel and stuff. I remember, you know, I was putting my, you know, I called my speech the Cowl of Real Deal, and I was kind of, so I did two speaking. I did that speaking engagement, then they had some speaking engagement up the next night about street art, and I was part of that. But I was a nervous wreck because, I mean, these damn kids now, I thought they'd be, oh, Real Deal is, oh my God, it's misogynist. Oh. And after I gave my speech, you know, the young chicks coming up, you know, what do you call snowflakes and, you know, college age people. Oh, I love Real Deal. Oh, and come to find out, I was in there. They got the Real Deal hardcover in the school library. So I said, okay. So everything worked out good and stuff. But, you know, I said, well, you know, you read it and then you get it and then you understand it. You know, but, you know, with anything, you got to read. You got to look at shit. You just can't look at it. This is horrible because then you find out you're wrong and shit.
There was a big period where Real Deal comics really weren't coming out for like maybe close to a decade. What was some of the stuff that were you working on other things? Yeah. Like what was happening?
Oh, nah, it was just everything was just rough. Like I said, Harold died in 98. Then you know, like I said, you know, constantly working regular jobs. He died in 98. That was devastating. Then my mom died in 2002, and then my little sister died in 2007. She had breast cancer, and you know, then at the same time I gotta survive, so it was just rough. You know, you just, you know, it's hard to concentrate on, you know, like, you know, you're drawing and stuff, but I mean, it's just like there's no free time. Like every minute is just, you know, you're going from one nightmare to the next, you know. So yeah, I just, what happened in 2010, I know Stussy came to me. And I did a series of shirts for him and stuff. I'm wearing one right now. I did for Stussy. And that kind of got things going again because the guy, J.J. Villard, he's the one, his bookstore, I think it's called Family Bookstore in Fairfax. He was a big Real Deal fan. He brought my stuff there. And then he told a guy who was the art director at Stussy about Real Deal. He never heard of it, a guy named Adam. And then they contacted me, you know, wanted me to do, I did six shows at the same time, and we tried. I was in development with Fox Animation for over a year because JJ, he because he's our he's an animator and stuff like that, and a director. And he hooked me up with a pitch over at Fox Animation, and a guy Nick Wheatonfield, he loved Real Deal, and he signed us to a development deal, right? You know, because we was like, damn, got a development deal on the first pitch. So we were in development like about a year, and you know, they hired me a writer and everything, and a guy named Brian Ash, real good animation writer. And but then after a year, then I think Nick left Fox, and then the new guy came in, and then he didn't want to do the show. You know, I guess he had his own shit he wanted to do. And then they called me up and said, you know, they say, hey, we've been in a development over a year. When are we going into production? And then they call, oh, they're not going to do this show. Do you want to come in and talk? And I was like somebody reached in my guts and just reached inside me, tore my guts out. Because, you know, I say the show would be, my main thing was to be in a position where I could just draw all the time and do what I want to do and not work some shitty job for somebody. That was rough. But I'm still pitching and stuff. But that was a trail.
Did you produce a lot of art for that, like that year that it was in development? Were you doing artwork for it then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of stuff. Because what happened was they, you know, writers and stuff, they kept coming up with like inventing new characters. And then I'd have to draw what they looked like they wanted to have GC's having a mother. And so I did, you know, draw her up, and then different, all kind of different women. They were talking about having a son. You know, people come with all kind of different ideas. Or what if this, what is that? So, yeah, I had to draw all that up. And then they had one where, you know, that writer was saying, like, you know, suppose, you know, like he had this whole storyline with Pork, but wanted to marry GC. So I had a whole wedding thing with them, you know, with the, you know, her and the wife, you know, and the wedding gown and all the thugged out characters standing behind her and stuff. So it was a lot of work. And at the same time, you know, I'm working as a security guard. And then at that time, I was running through some real rough shit. I didn't have a car. I was living in a motel. And then I had to fucking ride the bus to work every day. And then I'm trying, so I'm on the phone, you know, the writer's asking me all these questions because, you know, for the show. So he's constantly, I'm on the phone with all these different people, and I'm getting ready to go to my fucking security guard job. I said, okay, I gotta go and stuff. And I'm, you know, fucking catching a bus to go to this fucked up job. And oh, it was crazy. Oh, because another thing was funny, like, right after I got signed in development, then we had this big meeting with all these different guys. Oh, this guy's from New York. This guy's from here. This guy's from there. And, they, you know, we're going to be doing your show. And so they had a big fucking platter of food and shit, you know, sandwiches and brownies and sodas and stuff. So I had my backpack with me. So I was on fucking hard time. So while nobody was looking, I'm stuffing sandwiches and TV show, and I'm taking sandwiches, and I was a welder free fucking, you know. But it was funny because it was funny because right now I'm still doing security, and I'm working at that place where the Paramount Viacom. We had a Viacom building, and so I see people. Well, everything's quiet now because of this COVID shit, but I see people, you know, going in. They constantly have people going in for pitch deals and shit, and so people, you know, coming in and out. This one dude came out, he had like a handful of sandwiches and stuff, and I say, "Yeah, brother, I feel your shit." I see you going to pitch and stuff, you flat fucking broke and shit. Now, ooh, I'm starving and shit. I'm in this multi-billion-dollar plane, sitting up with executives, all this shit. Then let me get one of those sandwiches, you know? So it's, yeah, man, it's crazy now and shit, I tell you.
What kind of stuff are you working on now?
I just did some skateboards for Death Wish Skateboards. I did 4 boards for them, so whenever, I guess it'll be months from now before they come out, they do everything early, but you know, naturally I can't show them to you because that's their stuff. I'm working on, what the hell else am I doing? Real Deal number 9, I'm working on that. This one guy's got a gallery in England, so he loves my work. So he, what's his name? Tommy, son. I forget his name. But anyway, so he commissioned me, wants me to do some big canvas for him with kind of like taking some rapper he likes and then putting him in with Real Deal characters and stuff. So I got to do that. And then, like I said, I just finished the boards for Death Wish. And Johnny Ryan did some boards for him too, and JJ Villard. What else? Oh, then I got another gallery called P38. And it's called Gallery P38 in Paris. And they got a bunch of Real Deal stuff there and everything. Because that guy says, when I come out with Real Deal number 9, we can have the opening, like a premiere party at his gallery and stuff in Paris. So hopefully when that happens, everything, all this shit will be over with, so we can start living normal again and everything.
That's a good gallery, yeah, man.
Oh, you know about it?
Yes.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I figured you would, yeah. And yeah, the guy, guy's real cool. He's real cool, easy to get along with, and he's a big fan and stuff. And yeah, so yeah, it's cool. Yeah, like I say, yeah, he does everything over there. So there's a lot of fans all over Europe. I got fans in South America, Brazil, Argentina, real good Portugal. It's a trip. The real people love Real Deal. That's what I found kind of funny. Like, was that every time I do a Comic Con, somebody walk up and say, have you ever thought of animating this? Or so, yeah. Thoughts crossed our minds, yes. And it's just like, you know, the fans want it, you want it, but then it's kind of like these go-between people. You got to think that we call it gatekeepers. They're the ones you got to deal with. So I'm sure you've dealt with that, Jed, because my God, I look at all the work you put out. Man, that is... You put it out. I know, so you know, some of this should definitely be animated stuff. Yeah, it's a trip. And I still have a regular job. I've had so many times in my life I've been flat fucking broke. That's like, until I get a deal where and everything really looks smooth, I'll just hold on to this shit, because I just had too many times where, like, you're like, oh my God, you know, how am I going to pay for this? How am I going to pay for that? And that's a hell of a feeling. You know, what do you say? As Danny Glover said, I'm getting too old for this shit. You know, I can't do that. So, many of them still trying to get a TV show. We still got, you know, different people out here working on things and stuff. And we're trying to get some things hooked up and stuff. But, yeah, so like you said, working on Real Deal number 9. And then I'm going to start getting more digital stuff and everything. Because right now, you know, I kick it old school. Bristol board, pencil, pen, and markers and stuff. But, yeah, like I said, I'm going to get into some more digital stuff. I'm going to start doing some... T-shirts and, like, you know, here's the original OG Real Deal cap. I'm gonna start doing some more of these and just all kind of other stuff. So, you know, when I hit the cons, like, you know, just have all kind of shit for people to buy and stuff.
Can you get into the process of how it works to construct one of your comics? So Real Deal 9, for instance, how does the writing process work? Do you write on the fly? Does it have a big script?
Yeah, we put the whole story together. Basically, it's interesting. Like, for Harold wrote everything, H.P. McElwee. But then, friend, he grew up with my friend, Kempte, he's good at writing it, too, because it's almost like a formula, the Real Deal. So in the latest, so we both just kind of bounce ideas off each other. And then we recorded on the phone. And then I just listen to it over and over again, and then the pieces fall on my head, what the panel should look like and stuff. But I'll just have it on the phone and just, like, you know, just the outline of it. And I start drawing and then I start putting in the dialogue and stuff. Because this next Real Deal number 9, we're taking a crew from out of the ghetto, and they're going to wind up over in Europe. They're going to be in England and stuff, fucking up. And it's going to be wild. Where just, and the main thing, like, you know, take them out of their normal, element and put them somewhere else. So this is going to be cool. It's really a lot of fun. You read Real Deal number 8, where you finally met Mr. Benson, who was the guy who, you know, everybody wondered, well, how does GC get to run around killing people and do all this shit that he ever, and he never goes to jail and just fucking up left and right, never ever happens in. He runs into Mr. Benson, was like, hey, everything you're doing is what I plan on you doing, and you're helping me make money and this, that, and the other. So then he's going to, it's going to be wild. So I'm working on that. So, I can hardly wait. And so I'm so thankful I have Fantagraphics as a publisher. So all the shit you have to worry about when you're self-published, handle everything. I just give them the art, you know, and do your thing. They don't come in like, oh, you should do this, all this shit. You know, like, some people second guessing you and stuff. They just like, hey, we like your work, you do your thing and shit. Yeah, so that's my process. Yeah.
Jim, do you draw bigger, Lawrence, and then reduce the pages down for print?
Yeah. I use 19 by 24 Bristol board. My image area is like 17 something by 19. And then at 50%, then it goes down to comic book size and stuff. But that's about, I love to draw big because that's where you get the most detail. And you draw small, it's hard to get the detail in and stuff.
Do you have any of those pages pages next to you? Something within arm's reach?
Yeah. Give me a second here. I got some.
I had no idea that these pages were printed, originally drawn so big, man. And I just would love
it's exciting.
To catch a glimpse at one of them.
Okay, see that? Yeah, that's it is real before.
That's amazing. Awesome.
Yeah. So that's how I draw. And then about 50% reduction, and that gives you the comic size and stuff.
What kind of tools do you use for inking?
Oh, these different India ink pens and stuff. Like you get an RSA. Let me see, you got one regular nice pens you see at the art store. Like this right here, or pens, just regular inking pens, and what's this one? Yeah, brush, what's this? Pigma brush, it's kind of like this, and it's just like I said, I'm thinking the next issue I'm gonna do it digitally and stuff, but these are the kind of pens I use for my inking, so they wear out pretty quick, so I go through a lot of pens when I'm drawing stuff.
Why go digital?
Yeah, like that. A lady friend of mine, she's digital, and I was practicing on her surface. And it's just speed. Man, you know, you get a lot more speed out of it because just like I said, I can draw straight ink without doing the pencil first, then the ink. And, it's just amazing how you can erase things so quickly. You can change your mind and draw something where it'd be a lot more harder. Like, I still, because I love, you know, like I say, people have feeling the pencil on the board or stuff too, because that's definitely. I'm thinking about doing a real deal number 9 in color. They said I could do it in color, so I'm thinking about that. So, take it to the next level and stuff. I've always been curious about what that would look like.
I love your color work in the on the covers and everything. And Jimmy and I, we were taking a close look, trying to figure out some of that stuff. Like, clearly there's a little bit of marker, but it looks like you use some other stuff in your color work as well.
It's mostly marker, ink pen. I use white out. Sometimes I've used watercolor in with the marker, you know, to get, you know, if there wasn't a color, I could get with the marker. And just mixing it up, stuff like that. And now on the real deal, on the hardcover, on the graphic novel, I drew that in black and white. Then they, painted that and stuff, photoshopped that. But, the other stuff, like I said, I use marker, and I use the marker blender, and that's good. It gives you a smoother look.
Lawrence, I was looking at your website. Is that still a good place for people to buy books and artwork from you?
Yeah, it's still up. Yeah, it's just, we just redid it and everything. I got a buddy of mine, my web guru and stuff, and everything's up to date with that.
And you sell original art on your website.
I sell original art. I got some left and everything. And I tell you, original art saved me sometimes if the money's been tight at the end of the month and stuff. Sell a few pages and it pulls me through and stuff. Yeah, I definitely sell original art.
Jim, I know there's anticipated comic that was advertised in Real Deal comics that you've been looking forward to for a couple of decades.
Whatever happened to Power Bear, Lawrence? I love the Power Bear ad.
Shit.
Real deal.
Yeah, I know. Everybody loves that. I've had people asking for it. I say, hey, set things up. Like I say, if I can just draw all the time, I'll give it to you and stuff. But right now, I got a regular job. So that's always like, you know, just struggling to get Real Deal out. But yeah, I definitely love to put out a Power Bear because, Power Bear, you know, serious Native American. Everybody loves it. Because funny, my friend JJ Villard, he drives me crazy. He said, I want the Power Bear original. I want the Power Bear. He's serious about that. He wants his art. So, I've wanted to do it. Like I say, one of the things, time, you know. I'm always in this damn situation where I'm working. So hopefully, like I said, if I can get a show, something like got this damn job. But right, I'm a security guard right now. So if I can just cut this shit a little, you know, then I can give everybody all the art they want, because that's all I want to do. I'd be like, yeah, Ed here, just drawing all day. Look, I got, man, I said, Ed, you're so prolific, man. Look how you're putting out hundreds of 1,000 pages. It's like, hey, I wish I could do that. Knocking them pages out.
Lawrence, what are some of the influences on Real Deal? Does it come from film, from novels, like from real life?
A lot of it, not my life. All the people in Real Deal are people we've known, and basically just exaggerate the shit they do. But it's like just like a lot of the characters in there back in the day, even HP, Mac, and Tim, that used to roll up to Oakland in the 70s to go partying and stuff. They knew people, and they literally knew people. GC was a real man who was short guy, was crazy, threw a potted plant through a window. He pulled a gun on his own son, all that. And this was a real man. And so that was him. And then everybody would, you know, go on like these parties where you go in and walk through the wrong door and you see a bunch of dudes sitting and just, you know, carving up coke sets, separating the bags and stuff. And they look at you, you look at them, and it's like, nobody trips going to see anybody at this party. It's cool. And so fuck it, you know. And those people, I've known people, you know, gangbangers, thugs, people who are just crazy. And people who just blow up and don't give a fuck about going to jail, don't give a fuck about killing anybody, just do anything. And that's where it came from. It's kind of some black exploitation from the movies in the 70s that we all loved and stuff, you know, the Mac and Willie Dynamite and Cleopatra Jones and all these things. And it's been some real crazy people, and that's Real Deal. It's just like a amalgamation of all these different people into one character.
Does music factor into your influences?
Yeah, cool, funky soul music, stuff like that. I always, you know, saying if we put out a DC movie or something, I'd like to, you know, have a Real Deal soundtrack where I let Kempe put that together, where it would be like a lot of obscure music from the 70s, like that you don't. You know, it's not like the super popular shit you used to hear, but it's cool stuff. And yeah, that whole 70s vibe, the 70s funky vibe, or that early rap vibe, you know, was really putting down message. Because some of the stuff started sounding all the same now, but back when, you know, shit was young, they're putting down some good messages and there's some good beats and stuff. And yeah, it's music. It's like a cultural thing, a whole thing, a real deal, like a real deal vibe, a real deal thing, stuff like that.
How important is humor and comedy in your work, Lawrence?
It's a lot of big part, because the main thing is satire. It's meant to be funny, because if it's just people running around cursing and shooting people and stuff, there's no wit there, so that's not funny. But with, you know, everything's funny because it's like, you know, gallows humor or something, you know, it's just demented. And it's all supposed to be funny. That's why it says humor for adults, you know. And that's what, you know, and everybody, people sit down and actually read it, get it and stuff. It was funny. I was just thinking when I was working at, when we first came out the first issue, and I was working at this company in a data center, me and this guy shared an office. And so this guy, he was real, oh, he's talking about how great the concert show was and values and all this stuff. So I came out with the book. I hand him the book. Yeah, I said, well, you know, everybody, all my friends, I give everybody an issue. So he's reading the book, and he's, oh, this is horrible. This is this. This is that. And I was like, well, fuck it. Okay, so I'll take it back. And he said, wait a minute, I'm not finished. That's so horrible. Oh, wait, guys, I'm going to waste an issue on these things. Cost money, you know. They said, well, wait a minute, I'm not finished. All right, you know, you can have it then. But I was just like, oh, this is horrible. Oh, like, oh. I'm not finished. Let me finish. You know, so
Do you keep up with comics? Do you have a collection?
You know what? If I right now it's kind of rough. Like I said, I work full time, struggling to do my stuff. I really don't have the time. You know, people send me stuff, I don't read it. Because really, I want to collect your work. There's so many people I want to have a pile of their work and just be reading it. But you know, if I was just doing comics, that'd be fun. But right now, after I talk to you, then I, you know, if we do this interview, I got to get ready to go to work. So, you know, I don't have the time. But later on, like I say, if I can break free from this shit, I'll keep up with everybody's stuff, because there's so much out there I want to read. So, you know, I love art. I love looking at other people's artwork. So, but right now, it's just kind of hard for me to keep up with anything.
Do you hold on to like some of the specific Mad magazines that were important to you and older comics?
I got some comics, a lot of those books, you know, bought in the 70s and early 80s that I've done so many times and stuff, and so much shit's happened that a lot of my loss, but I got a few things and stuff, but I don't have the big collection. All the books I used to have, I don't have them anymore. Yeah. Stuff just wound up disappearing and stuff. Yeah.
I want to make sure that we have links below this video that people can click to get your stuff. So where are you available on social media and or, you know, website links, whatever?
Yeah, well, the website is realdealcomics.com. And that's, everything get through there. And then Facebook, I just have my regular name on there. But Instagram, it's I think it's a Raw Dog Mac. Yeah, Raw Dog _ Mac. And I'm on, Twitter. I can't remember what I am on Twitter. I don't use it that much. But, that's it. So this, just like I said, this is Real Deal number 9. Now, it was funny. I was kind of glad. I wanted the Comic-Con to go on and stuff. At the same time, you know, with this damn job, I haven't had a chance to finish the book. And I didn't want to be down there without another book. Because you know how it is. You know, you go down there like, you know, where's the book? Where's the new book? I remember when some guy was next to us one time and he came down. People said, where's the new book? He said, oh, I didn't have to. Where's the new book? Like, it was embarrassing. The second Comic-Con I went to, it was in 2001. So, you know, like I said, always working full-time jobs, people dying and stuff. So I only had a chance to put one book out, issue number 6. And so some dude, he had like this whole crew with him. He was like a hardcore Real Deal fan. And he came up to the table and he's like, oh, Real Deal. And he grabbed a book. And he started looking around the table. Where the other books? Where the other issues? So he just came out with one and said, he said, one book in a year? And I swear to God, I was about to knock the table off. I say, sorry, man. We can't shit. If I was just drawing real, yeah, you'd have 12 more issues. You got one bit many issues. Where's my real? It's like he was a junkie guns and shit was real. Shit. My real deal fix it. One issue, one. I'm like, man, that's how I feel about it too. Shit. But yeah, man. So just like I'm out here hustling, trying to get deals here, deals there. This that, like I said, escape or whenever, like I said, probably months from now, but the boards come out. I'll let you know. And that and then that stuff. Yeah, all kind of stuff. Plus, you know, just trying to bust mine out and everything.
Well,
that's about it. Yeah.
Well, listen, man, we're going to have these links below where people can grab your current work, page of original art, awesome. Whatever, man. And I think it would be cool to have you back on whenever Real Deal 9 is out. You know,
Hell yeah, sure. You'll know up front and everything.
That'll be fly. That'll be super cool, man. We're going to cut out, man. Let you get to work. And, thanks for coming by, Lawrence.
Thanks for the interview, man. I appreciate it. I had a good time.